Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Carulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Wake Up Hollywood, filling in for Eddie Pence, Mr. Ronan Rosner. How are you, buddy?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Hey, what?
Do you keep tabs? You know, I think after Eddie, obviously, because he's the official co-host. I'm the replacement, the pinch co-host.
That's
with
right.
The most appearances.
That's right. Actually, you are.
Yeah.
You know what? That's because you're good at it too. You know what? You're our engineer extraordinaire, but you're like our pinch co-hoster.
Yeah. Well, you said it. I'm the engineer. So whenever Nikki doesn't have anybody, he's like, Ronan, can you come in? I was, oh, okay.
You're like, yeah, I can do it. And you know what? It's been a hectic day.
Yep.
You've had a power outage.
Yeah.
You've had all kinds of a circus of shows while we're just, you know, hanging about. So
yeah,
thanks for
fun day
this.
At LA Talk Radio.
That's right. No, how was fun, your week? What did you
do
last week?
It was great. Actually, we went family for a little weekend, just traveling.
Where'd you go?
Tehachapi.
Well, bless you.
Yeah, thank you. And we kind of explored a little bit of the rural areas of California,
yeah,
so to speak. Tehachapi.
How far was it?
Well, all in all, we traveled about 400 miles, which is not a lot.
But it's more inland, isn't it?
Yes, okay. Exactly. So it's kind of like a little town with a lot of history. No, it wasn't that cold. But it was.
And that's amazing. What made you just want to choose that place?
Well, we headed north, a bit north to Kern River, Kern Valley. We stayed at a little town called Kernville. But along the way, we just stopped for a little sightseeing. So the Hatchet
Beach
was one.
Did you camp or did you like
stay in a lodge? No, a little lodge. Yeah, it's really beautiful.
I'm too old for camping. I can't do all that.
You know what? I want to take my daughters camping. So we'll start with like one night, easy, and then we'll just
ease into it.
Yeah, but all in all, it's really nice. You know that area, Southern Sierras. It's really beautiful this time of year.
That's awesome. You can actually
see fall. People say there's no seasons in California. Well,
yeah.
Over there you can see.
You're like, once you're 400 miles north and east, that's when the season starts.
Yeah.
Did you go to the Sequoias by chance?
No, not this time. We've been to the Sequoias.
Okay.
We're thinking maybe we'll go on Thanksgiving.
Oh, the reason I ask is I almost went on a trip to the Sequoias last week. My girlfriend's son came into town, and we ended up doing more touristy stuff in L.A., but the first time that he came out here, we went to Yosemite and did all of that, so we were thinking, let's do another nature trip.
Oh, wow.
But we instead went to Disneyland, which I hadn't been in a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Disneyland is crazy.
Yeah, it is.
And you know what? Luckily, it wasn't too crowded. It was like we only had to wait like 15, 20 minutes per ride.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. And that weekend, kids were off from school.
So that's like the weekend I think I'll go. It's like post-Halloween, before Thanksgiving.
Probably.
That's the time to go because it wasn't... I mean, Disneyland's always pretty crowded, but it wasn't like obnoxious. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then I saw Bruno Mars over the weekend, which was awesome. Then I saw another, my favorite slide guitarist, a guy named Derek Trucks.
Of course.
He's a badass. You know Derek Trucks. So it was a music... filled weekend. But the craziest thing I did, I went to the Museum of I guess it's Natural History. It's the California Science Center, and they have this
next to USC.
Human bodies. Have you seen this?
I've heard about it. I've seen the photos.
My God,
yeah,
it's
with
crazy.
The actual bodies.
You see the muscle tissue, you see the skulls, You see the bones. You see everything. And it is kind of remarkable. Like,
yeah.
It kind of makes you not take the human body for granted. Like obviously, we do every day.
And it's something you don't see unless you're studying.
And you never forget it.
Yeah. Unless you're studying medicine or into gore. But
but I mean, it was great. Like, you see like a smoker's lung versus a healthy lung. You see healthy brains versus brains with tumors.
Wow.
I mean, just the craziest stuff. I mean, everything from, you know, the esophagus to intestines. You see the intestines, it's like 30 feet long.
I mean,
it's just incredible. It's like, it was kind of mind-blowing to see that. It was like really... like exploring the human body in a way that I've never done. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
So, yeah.
It was a very event-filled, jam-packed week.
Nice.
But now everything's just kind of subsiding. And now we get back to preparing for the holidays.
Yeah.
Are you doing anything for Thanksgiving?
Family gathering.
Are you planning the menu right now?
Actually, no. I'm not into it's never my responsibility. Yeah.
You're like, I will just eat and do the dishes.
Yep.
Do you cut the turkey?
Well, no, I let someone else. And I don't
like
eat
your
meat.
House rules. Yeah. That's nice.
I don't eat meat at all, so I'm kind of stay away from it.
So what's your most excited dish that you're going to do back from somewhere?
Well, I'll probably make something vegetarian to replace that turkey. And
you do tofurkey?
No. I mean, I'm not that obsessed about, you know, not letting other people eat. So go ahead and enjoy. I'll have my other things that I can eat, and just we'll share the rest. You know, any vegetables, stuffing.
I always look forward to stuffing, mac and cheese, and Brussels sprouts. That's my jam. In the next 2 weeks, that's what I'm planning.
Nice.
Well, let's welcome back our special guest for the evening, Miss Victoria Namkung. How are you, Victoria?
I'm great. It's so good to be back with you. I can't believe it's been like 2.5 years.
I know. And you know what? It's crazy because you're on your second book now.
Yes, that's true.
Let's just jump right in. I was reading all the, you know, like the notes and things that you sent about it. And this is a very timely book.
Yes. I never could have predicted the timeliness of this book. My book deals with a group of alumnas from a high school here in L.A., a fictional high school, who band together to take down their former teacher who was sexually harassing and sexually assaulting girls. It's very much reminiscent of what's going on in the culture with Harvey Weinstein, with Kevin Spacey. I could add 500 other people to that list.
Yes.
Every
they're
day
all
it's
coming
like,
down.
Yeah,
Louis
we just
C.K.,
can't keep up
all,
with it. Yeah. So it's incredibly timely, and in some ways, that's been the silver lining of all these horrible stories every day, is I feel like more people may get to read my book because I'm doing a lot of radio and a lot of interviews. You know, people want to talk about this subject now, and they actually are starting to believe women for the first time in our culture, where, you know, as soon as you have a few allegations, people are starting to take this seriously, whereas in the past it was always sort of swept under the rug. It was very hard to go up against these powerful, you know,
I think the coolest thing is you're giving women a voice.
Yeah,
you're like, you're helping people to step up and say, hey, I was wronged, and this needs to be right.
Yeah, and in the book I have four female characters, and one of them, Karen, who's a 22-year-old young woman, she's the one who's the first one to put out the essay. She does an essay for the local paper talking about, you know, my high school teacher claimed he fell in love with me when I was 15, and she sort of blows the door open, and then other victims start stepping forward. So it's very much like what we're seeing happen in real time, like in the Washington Post, the New York Times, the New Yorker, all these stories. So a lot of times it does take that first person to come, you know, to come forward, and then that gives other people confidence. But no matter how many people come forward, like, there was that director, James Toback, who I think there's 300 people have come forward.
Wow, I didn't know it was that many.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
So that sounds like so many, but there's probably hundreds of others who will never come forward. You know,
Do you think that's because of the shame that comes
with it? There's so many reasons. A lot of people, you can see the way, like what's going on with the senatorial campaign in Alabama with Roy Moore, who's under a lot of heat today. You know, sites like Breitbart or these ultra-right-wing sites, they totally go after the victims. You know, they're looking for anything and everything they can do to disparage the victims. That's always been a tactic. In fact, even schools, like, you could have a girl who's 14 who makes an allegation, and even LAUSD would send investigators, lawyers, to go after these victims, to discredit the victims. So it's incredibly scary to come forward, and it's especially scary to come forward if you do not have a public persona. You know, if Angelina Jolie comes forward and says, Harvey Weinstein, you know, cornered me in a hotel room and wanted me to do XYZ, right, we can believe that. You know, this is an Oscar-winning actress we all know by name, and, you know, she's world famous. But imagine just being a regular person.
Secretary, assistant,
you know, you just feel like, who's going to believe me? You know, I'm going to get my personal life dragged through the mud. What if you did have a scandal in your past? Or maybe like this woman who's accusing Roy Moore, you know, they keep bringing up, oh, she was married three times. Well, you know, our president was married three times. Right. Many people have been married three times. J-Lo has been married three times.
Yeah, it shouldn't have anything to do with
it. You know, that does not mean a sexual assault did not take place just because someone was married a few times. So they'll really pick at anything. So unless you're like a perfect victim, meaning like a Catholic nun or, you know, a four-year-old child, it's incredibly hard to get people to believe you.
And I see, like, even if you have a huge voice, like an Angelina Jolie or Gwyneth Paltrow, they didn't step up.
Exactly.
They were very quiet when things were going on because maybe they wanted to protect their career.
Yes.
Maybe they felt like it was going to tarnish, you know, their reputation for XYZ reasons. Who knows?
Absolutely.
And so it's kind of, like, crazy that even if you do have a vehicle where you can say, this happened, it may backfire and they just, you know, keep their voices quiet.
Yeah, so there's a lot of actresses who are known around Hollywood as being difficult to work with. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times that means they actually called someone on their BS.
Wow.
You know, so it's really sad that when you read a lot of these stories, especially with Harvey Weinstein, so many people gave up their dreams of acting or gave up their dreams of singing or whatever it was. Just because of these incidents. And that's really horrible. Like, that makes me so angry because, you know, like, if you look at the Louis C.K. Story as well, you know, Louis's defense was, well, I asked if I could take my penis out first, so I didn't think I was doing anything wrong. I would argue that nobody should be showing their penis in the workplace. You know, regardless, even if the woman wanted to see it, can you do that on your own time after the day is done?
Right.
So same thing with schools. I don't think a child should go to school and ever have to worry about her teacher coming on to her. I think that is outrageous.
Yeah.
And it's at every level. Even in college, you know, I had professors who would date the students, or, you know, one of my girlfriends even married one of our professors at UCLA. And that wasn't even that big of a scandal because we were over, you know, the age of consent and she was a grown woman. You know, that relationship did not work out. And I think he went on to marry another student. But yeah, there, you know, this is, you know, a lot of people, a lot of guys in particular get defensive over this book because they feel like, oh, is it going to be an attack on men? Most men are wonderful, just like most teachers are wonderful. We're talking about like 5% of the population who is just a total evil scumbag, right? And they go out and they don't just do it once. They do it hundreds of times.
Yeah.
So that's why most girls you know or women you know have a story, but most men are not actually offenders.
Right.
So I like to point that out, that, you know, when even when you're hearing these stories, Harvey, Louis C.K., it seems like a lot of people, but in the grand scheme of Hollywood, it's a small percentage.
And I feel like a lot of people knew about Harvey's behavior for years and just didn't say anything.
Yeah, well, I have a really weird Harvey story. You know, last time I was on, we talked about I was a red carpet reporter in my former life. And one time I went to this very fancy gala dinner where, you know, I'm sure it was like $1,500 a seat. But I was just there covering the event, and I was actually supposed to be seated next to Harvey Weinstein. The place card was right there. So I was a little intimidated because I had heard he's a real tough, you know, character. I'd never heard about the sexual allegations. And an actress actually came over to me, a lowly journalist, and said, I think you should switch the place cards.
Wow.
And I said, with who? I have no right to do that. You know, I didn't want to get in trouble. And she said, just trust me, switch the place cards. And so when all this came out, I was thinking, you know, was she trying to warn me? Was she trying to protect me from something? And maybe not sexual abuse, but just that he's a horrible person.
Right.
He's just known to be so aggressive and rude. And so I really appreciated that because a lot of times women can't really get their own justice.
Did you switch the cards?
I did switch the cards.
Smart cookie.
And then he ended up not showing up. So luckily it all worked out. So I didn't get in trouble and I didn't have to deal with him. But, you know, a lot of times women, it's called like a whisper network. You know, we have to warn each other about these creepy guys in our presence, because a lot of times, you know, there is no, you know, if people aren't coming forward in a legal stance. So, yeah.
Nuts. And you know what? Just so people don't think you're like capitalizing on all the things that are happening, you started this book a year and a half ago.
Yeah, I started this book way before. I mean, I started the book even before the election. I didn't know we were going to be living under a President Trump. I started this book before Grab 'Em by the Pussy happened. Yeah. I started the book, yeah, well before any of hashtag Me Too,
I'm sure those
or all
triggers.
This. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the timing was just shocking, because when you start writing a novel, it's kind of like making a movie. You know, it doesn't come out till 2 years later. It's like you're trying to capture something in the culture, but I never imagined it would be this climate. So it's actually been great for me, because I feel like people, if all this hadn't come out with Harvey Weinstein and everything that followed, maybe this book would feel awkward to talk about, or maybe parents wouldn't want, you know, to talk about this with their kids. But now we've sort of forced this national conversation. You really can't avoid
it. Well, I'm like fascinated with how these like dirtbags get into powerful positions.
Right.
It's like that's what's always...
Tell you what, non-disclosure agreements and money under the table. That's how.
Yeah,
but it's like, why would you trust somebody like who... I'm sure somebody else could do Harvey's job just as well.
Yeah, but he was at the top of his game, right? He's one of the biggest. And if you're familiar, the first woman he ever, whoever tried to complain about him, ended up getting money and signed a non-disclosure agreement. Right. Now think about if that woman wouldn't have done it, she would have come out. All this would have stopped maybe years ago, maybe not, because he's still a very powerful man. But I mean, the thing is, and if it was, let's say, an up and coming actress, and he just goes, if you don't sign it, you're done in this industry. So what options does she have?
Right.
You know. So,
and
that's
going
the
up against
thing.
The machine, like with all
and
the
look
big
what
leaders.
Happened. All the women that came out, and you heard it from the horse's mouth, our president grabbing them by the pussy.
Yeah.
And he got elected anyway.
That's what's
or
crazy
you got in Alabama,
me.
The age of consent in Alabama is 16. Right. So they're saying, well, he messed up with he, you know, fondled a 14-year-old girl. It's not a big
acceptable.
Deal.
Right.
Well, it's not a big deal for them, and that's the sad thing about it. So,
well, that's what we were talking about before. Like some of the voters are still going to vote for him.
Yep.
As a result,
yeah,
it's like that's crazy.
Yeah.
Some of them are more empowered to vote for him because they feel like, you know, it's all a media conspiracy, it's all a liberal conspiracy. They're in such an echo chamber down there that they truly, you know, and that's what, you know, with the fake news stuff too. It's sort of a way to get Trump's followers to not believe anything that is reported in a legitimate news outlet. So, you know, I'm also a journalist in addition to being an author, and it's so infuriating because, you know, you heard about alternative facts, or you heard, you know, the fake news media. He called the press, you know, the enemy of the American people. I mean, that's probably the least democratic thing a sitting president could say. The press is what has helped us get to where we are in learning about the corruption and the collusion.
Well, and he's trying to stifle news
absolutely,
networks.
Absolutely.
I think in general, I think it shows you that the U.S. is still a very conservative country, a very male chauvinist.
Yes.
Because you see it everywhere, pay gaps, that thing that happened in Google a few months ago.
Yes, that's
that
right.
Manifesto saying women are not supposed to do any...
Right, we're biologically different. And
I mean, it just shows you how people still think that women are inferior.
Yeah. It's true. And this whole, you know, the hashtag Me Too campaign, you know, the social media.
Alyssa Milano started that, right?
Yeah, Alyssa Milano. I guess it was an African-American activist that started it years ago, but Alyssa Milano made it known on Twitter, public. And that's how it went viral. And I wrote a piece as well on my Facebook page. And, you know, some guys I went to high school with contacted me, and they just couldn't believe that's what happened at our high school. And I said, I guarantee you, if you ask any woman in your life, have you ever been sexually harassed? Have you ever felt like you were in danger? Have you ever felt like someone was holding power over you? Every single woman I know has a story. And most of us have 10 and 20 and 30 stories. It's not one story. It's something that goes on all the time.
The unfortunate thing is, like, the beauty of a woman brings out the ugliness of a man.
Yeah. And
it's like, just like, and it shouldn't be that way.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who believe, like, if we were all covered up, you know, like Saudi Arabia style, okay, then there wouldn't be harassment. But that, I mean, to me, that is also nuts. I think, you know, men have to solve this issue. I don't think women should have to change anything about how they dress.
Well, there's abuse in Saudi Arabia.
Absolutely.
I mean,
so
in some ways.
Yeah, so it's clearly a male issue, and I think it's very much tied up in power and entitlement and sort of that I just get what I want, I do what I want, I don't have to play by the rules because I'm rich and powerful. If Louis C.K. was not making money or making money for other people, his story would have been published sooner. You know, other journalists tried to write these stories and they get killed. You know, Harvey also had a publishing imprint. So he would tell journalists, like, if you kill this story, I'll give you a book deal.
Wow.
So talk about, really? You know, it's not just the NDAs. It's all these backroom deals, these stories that get squashed. You get intimidated. I can tell you right now, like, if I did a freelance story for Vice, let's say, I would get paid somewhere around $250. It is not worth $250 for me to get threatened by Harvey Weinstein or to think that my career is going to be ended or that I'm going to have private eyes digging into every single thing I've ever done, said, thought. Wow. So you can see how these stories get killed.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting. And it's kind of despicable that the Vice only pays $250.
It sure is.
Something that is so valuable to
By the
society.
Way, I mean, that's even considered good because that's paid. You know, there's plenty of outlets that don't even pay anymore, and that's a whole other story.
So let's talk about these four women in the book.
Yes.
Are they different degrees of abuse and harassment? Like, you kind of have them unionize, you know, to kind of overcome, you know, the Goliath in
Absolutely.
The story.
Yeah, so the Goliath in the story is basically this very charismatic English teacher who uses Shakespeare sonnets and poetry to, you know, to sort of connect and lure these girls in. And so, yeah, they all have different stories. So Karen, the one who writes the essay that starts the whole thing, she basically just has, he makes a pass at her. It doesn't really go beyond that, but he sort of like touches her knee inappropriately and he kisses her in the classroom one day. So that's her story. But then there's two other women who had much more involved relations, meaning sexual relations, right. sexual contact. And one in particular, Sasha in the book, who I think is the greatest character in the book. She just feels very alive and kinetic, but she actually has full-blown sexual relationship, you know, with him for many months. And he promises her, you know, that they're going to get married when she turns 18 and he's going to leave his wife.
Wow.
And, you know, that whole thing. I based all of these girls off of very much real life stories that happened at private schools across America. And this goes on at public school. It goes on at religious schools. It goes on in every single school you can think
of.
Was
it a story that you were, like, in the neighborhood of? Or was it something that you read that triggered...
Yes,
you do want to write about it.
So, you know, I've always kept up with these teacher-student stories, like ever since Mary Kay Letourneau when we were growing up. That was probably the most famous story. And, you know, I read a lot, and so I would read these cases. But the case that really inspired me was here in L.A. at Marlboro School, which is one of these schools where it's like $40,000 tuition, and you have to make donations, and, you know, it's very fancy. I think it's been around for, like, since 1898 or something like that. So... it's LA's most prominent girls' school, and they had a case, Dr. Ketters, who had slept with numerous students, had you know, harassed students, people, you know, various people brought their stories forward. And it actually turned into a legal case, and he actually went to jail. And that's so unusual. I can't tell you how unusual it is for a teacher to actually get punished and do jail time.
And it was a high school?
It's like a junior high school, but the girls he had abused were in their teens, like, you know, 15, something like that. So I followed that case, and he looks kind of like Andy Richter. Like, he's not, you know, he's not Clooney, right? So I was really fascinated, like, how would a man like that get a gorgeous 15-year-old girl who's on the, you know, cusp of young womanhood to fall for him? And I sort of know how, because I was a 15-year-old girl who was extremely mature for my age. I did not necessarily connect with boys my age, even though I liked them, and I still chased them. But I could see very easily how that could happen. Yeah. And so I was writing from that point of view. And also, even though I don't have children, I have a lot of friends who have children who are coming up on this age and, you know, in junior high and going into high school. And I just felt like I wanted to do something that would help young women, and I wanted to do something that would help start a conversation. Now, I didn't know that this conversation would have been started, but I think that people don't realize how common it truly is in our schools. And it's something like 15 kids a week are sexually abused by teachers in America. So to me, that's a pretty large enough statistic to take it seriously. And then think of all the ones that were never reported that we have no idea. I had my own experiences that I never reported. I regret that. You know, you commented that maybe if Rose McGowan had pursued a legal action instead of signing an NDA, I can't express enough how scary it is to come forward. And I had parents who were so cool. I could talk to my parents about dating, about sex. My mom took me to get birth control when I was 17.
Wow.
I mean, I have very forward-thinking, progressive parents, and I still couldn't tell them. The shame and the sort of...
Why, you don't think they would have had you back?
I know they would have had it too much. I was convinced my dad would have gone and murdered my...
Right.
It was a coach. And, you know, I think my dad would have murdered him or chopped a body part off, and then my dad would have been in jail. And so I was too scared to say anything. I knew that more harm would come to me than to the person. You know, I just knew that. I knew that it would follow me everywhere I went from that point on. So it wasn't a serious enough, there was no contact. It was just wildly inappropriate behavior, like asking me to sit on his lap while I'm in a bathing suit.
Wow.
I had a coach who would expose his genitals, you know, just supposedly by accident. And, you know, I've talked to people who I went to high school with to reconfirm, am I remembering this correctly? And they all said, yes, yes, yes.
That's nuts.
So we all knew this, and no one said anything. So then, of course, you have these regrets, like, did he go on and do that to other people? You know, was there a girl who did sit on his lap? And things went farther than that. So it is one of my regrets. I actually last year looked into whether he was still coaching, and he wasn't. So I left it at that. But if he was still coaching, I was going to call my school.
Your book is called These Violent Delights.
Yes.
Can you explain a little
bit
about the name?
I can. So it's from Romeo and Juliet. These Violent Delights Have Violent Ends is spoken by Friar Lawrence in Shakespeare. And it's basically Friar Lawrence is trying to warn Romeo about fleeting teenage love. And so, yeah, because the teacher is an English teacher, he's sort of a Shakespeare specialist, I wanted to use something from Shakespeare. But I also wanted to, you know, have something that sounded a little enticing, that if you just saw the cover, you were curious, you know, what is this? It's also very hard to come up with a book title. The original working title was The Snowflakes, because he would tell the girls they were all as unique and special as a snowflake. But then once the election happened, my publisher, my editor, my copy editor, every person who read it said, you cannot use that word, because now that's become an insult for a liberal.
Yes.
So I had to change that. So instead, he tells the girls they're unique, like a rare rose, and so that's why the cover has roses growing upward. And so, yeah, so that was, it came from Shakespeare.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the story itself, it's fiction, but is it based on actual events?
Yes.
Because I know you did a lot of research.
I talked to a lot of teachers, administrators, former students of these schools. I talked to some victims. I talked to parents of teenage students and sexual abuse experts. And yeah, I basically based, you know, I mentioned Marlboro. I also looked at Phillips Exeter, which had a huge sexual abuse scandal. I looked at Choate Rosemary Hall, which is a very famous school that JFK went to, and Michael Douglas. I also went there in the summer of 92. And, yeah, I sort of combined things that I found from the real-life cases and used them in a fictional manner. And I think because I'm a journalist, that is an easier approach for me than just creating an entire world. Like, obviously, some writers, they write fantasy or, you know, George Martin writes Game of Thrones. You know, it's this entire other alternate universe. But my book takes place in contemporary L.A., so it's very much, a lot of the reviewers say it reads more like nonfiction, like a true crime kind of story, and I take that as a compliment, because I think it's a very much like a page turner, a quick read.
The funny thing is also, you know, you think about the abuse of power that, you know, these teachers or politicians or whoever are kind of abusing, and there's also this other side of there are people that are wanting to come up in the ladder of success. So there's this weird meeting place.
Absolutely.
Where it's like, it's all questionable. You know what I mean? It's like there's this abuse of power, but then there's also this desire to succeed. Mm-hmm. And it's like, where do you kind of measure what's the most important to you, you know?
Right. Well, you know, I've never worked in corporate America, but I imagine these sexual harassment training seminars are very popular now.
Right.
You know, I think it's when you have unequal power, there's just no way to have a healthy relationship. You know, I think that's the case even with consenting adults. You know, if you have a Harvey Weinstein figure and then you have a housewife, let's say, that woman is just never going to have equal footing. So when something bad happens, she oftentimes is just not going to have a chance at any sort of justice. So I'm just not a fan of like these horribly unequal power dynamics. And so like when I was an intern coming up as a 22-year-old, I worked at LA Magazine and nobody there harassed me. Nobody did anything inappropriate. But let's say hypothetically, the editor said, I'll give you a 2-page story if you come with me to this dinner.
And you
know,
like, yes, I need
it. Would be hard. You would think like, wow, there have been women who've come forward, especially from the 60s and 70s. There's even a famous exec at HBO who wrote a whole book about this, how she felt like that was her only way to get a foot in or to get an edge up was to sleep with executives, to go on dates, to be arm candy, you know, whatever it was, even though here she was like a talented person who rose through the ranks of HBO. So it's very difficult. And I've always worked freelance. And I think part of that is I do not enjoy office dynamics. I don't think I would like it. And I wouldn't even know what to do if I was in that situation, you know, because you hear these other stories of people do go forward to HR. And it still gets swept under the rug, or they still get retaliated.
Well, because they're afraid of lawsuits.
Absolutely. And the NDA, I'm so glad you brought that up earlier, because the NDA is a way that you can basically buy your way out of criminal action. And that is so sick and upsetting. So I really hope these NDAs get changed, like to where they expire after a certain, like 18 months or 24 months, whatever it is, because that is so wrong that that can be hidden away for so many years.
I think this state senator or representative from, I think, one of Inland Empire somewhere who's about to propose a new legislation that
for
in NDR. Cases, yeah, in cases NDAs. Of sexual harassment and so on, there will be, you can't sign NDRs or NDAs and so on, just be, because you can't, they won't be able to cover it anymore. Yeah. Was there any, you know, during the time they wrote the book, was there any moments you said, you know, it's too hard?
Yes.
Maybe I shouldn't, delve into it.
Yeah, it's such a delicate subject.
Yeah, it's not an uplifting subject. You know, I've always tended towards darker things in my life, even though I'm a very, like, happy, sunny person. Like, people always tell me I'm the happiest person they know. But for some reason, I love reading about, like, serial killers and watching shows about, like, drug trafficking. So, the book was very heavy, and it basically sent me into therapy, if I'm being honest, because reading these court cases that were real, you know, it's not fiction. These are real women who suffered. I read some things that I will never forget. It's burned in my brain, and it's almost like a secondhand form of like trauma, you know, where you just start going, is there anyone who hasn't been molested? Is there anyone who hasn't been abused? Like, it's
especially
gets very
the
depressing.
Underage thing is like so disgusting.
Especially because I can still remember myself. And, you know, the best thing I can tell someone when they're talking about Roy Moore, they're talking about, 14's not that young. Go look at a 14-year-old.
Yeah.
Really look at their face.
Right.
Look at who they are. They're probably wearing braces. They're probably wearing, you know, sneakers. It's so
disturbing.
And it's not just about the age. We're not living in biblical times. People are not dying at 39. Like, it's not okay. And it's especially because of the power dynamic. And so, it would depress me. And it made me think of all the times I saw things and didn't say anything. It made me think of the times, like, girlfriends confided in me. One of my best friends when I was 15 was sleeping with a 40-year-old man.
Wow.
And I kept that secret for her because she begged me to. And if I could go back in time, of course, I would have...
You'd be like, what are you doing?
I would have made an anonymous call. I would have written a letter. But, you know, my therapist was like, you're 15. Like, what? You couldn't have done anything, you know? And again, I was convinced that harm would come to us if we said anything. And luckily, she got out of that. But... you know, that did do damage to her. There's no question. And so it was depressing. And I feel like I'm finally coming out of it. And I think that the Me Too stuff, like, helped me because it was a little, you know, it gets tiring reading those stories day after day. I mean, there's only so much you can take. But it did help me feel like, okay, this is finally a turning point in our culture. Like, it's not going to get worse from here.
Yeah.
It's only going
to
get
better. What
about,
like, to counter all of this, like, do you remember that story that came out in Rolling Stone? Where the girl, like, fabricated all these details.
Oh, the universe. Yeah.
What's so tough is that when a story like that comes out, it's like it's so difficult to
University
know.
Yeah, University of Virginia.
Like who to believe.
Yes, you know that was, well, that journalist was like really irresponsible. Right. If you look at that whole case, there were things that were handled, you know, definitely the wrong way from
like
the get-go,
sources,
like sources. Yeah. You know, real investigative journalists, probably that story would never have made it to where it did. Obviously, that did huge damage because then that lets all the people who love to say that victims are lying,
right,
they can pull that out. There was also the famous Duke LaCrosse case that was fabricated, you know, where they were not rapists. And, you know, I'll just point out that it's somewhere between 3 and 8% of rape allegations are false. So...
It's still a very low number.
It's a very low number, but people, if you talk to like the editors of Breitbart, they think it's 99%.
Yeah.
You know, it's
it's
really low. And not only is it low, but there's so many cases that are not reported that if you actually like put that into the grand scheme of things, it would be.
Well, it's also sad, like, you remember the Stanford swimmer?
Yes.
Like that whole situation where the girls were like passed out
yes.
in like, an alley. And he was like
by a dumpster,
him.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like the fact that he got off by a judge because they're like, oh, this will ruin his life.
We don't want to hurt his feelings.
And it's
the influenza kid?
Yes.
Yeah.
The rich kid?
Yeah,
yes.
That was, I mean, I just thought that was kind of ridiculous. Yeah. I was like, wait a minute.
I think Brock Turner paved the way for the rage. You know, you saw the Women's March, you know, 750,000 people marching in L.A., you know, the biggest march in the history of the world. People were so confused by that, you know. People were like, what do you have to be, you know, unhappy about? You're living in America. You're treated.
Right.
They always love to compare you like you're not in, you know, an Islamic fundamentalist country. They love to tell you that like that should be enough. Like you should just settle for what you get because you're not in a burqa and you're allowed to drive.
Right.
That's not enough for me. I'm sorry. I'm looking for full equality on every level and full respect on every level just as a person. And you always hear these people say things like, well, as the father of a daughter, as the, you know, husband of a wife, it's like, can you not see women just as people? Like,
right.
We don't have to be of you, you know? And I think the Handmaid's Tale show got a lot of women riled up. You know, that show is about what would happen if Mike Pence was running the world. It's basically a forced childbirth, you know, situation where women are, you know, imprisoned and just have to give birth. And you know, these things, and then Donald Trump, which is a whole other level of insanity.
He's a whole mess.
You know, women
issues.
Are pissed. Women are just not going to take it anymore. And I truly believe if they tried to pull something like repealing Roe versus Wade or, you know, criminalizing abortion further, I think there would be millions of women in the street. I think women are just waiting. Just
and kids,
try us.
Children.
And kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, we're just going through some dark times, but things are definitely going to be better. And I definitely have hope for the future, which I did not feel a year ago, you know, so I feel a lot more hopeful.
Well, and it's like stories like this, they empower people.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? And it kind of sheds a light a little bit in a different context.
Absolutely.
Than it's just coming from a media outlet.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I had a reader, you know, I've had a lot of book reviews and stuff, and I had this blogger who's like a Christian mom blogger. So I was a little nervous when the link was sent to me because I'm like, is she just going to hate this book, you know?
Right.
But she wrote this note and she just said, you know, after reading this book, I feel like I want to dedicate the rest of my life to pursuing justice for women. And
that's
I
awesome.
Was, you know, that was enough. It was like, even if I sell no books beyond that, that kind of made it worth
impact.
All the, you know, all the hard nights and days. So, yeah, I think it's good to give people that confidence.
Can we read a passage from here?
Sure.
I'm going to have you read it since you wrote it.
Well, I'll just start at the beginning because otherwise it would be so out of context.
Okay,
but
no problem.
Yeah, so the fourth character I failed to mention is Jane, who's an investigative reporter at The Daily, which is a pseudo LA Times. I just don't want to get sued. But,
right,
you know,
right,
so
right.
She's there and then Karen's her intern. And so it sort of kicks off from there. So I'll just read the first bit here. Okay, so this is Jane speaking, the reporter. What is the point of a high school reunion when you can already see who got fat and bald on Facebook? Asked Karen, the intern working with me this semester, and I can't help but laugh because she's right. Karen works one desk over from me, but she steps into my cubicle to chat, and she's quite chatty. Anytime she's on her way to or from the bathroom down the hall, which feels like 10 times a day on average. I sense her hovering while I glance at the digital save the date invitation to my 20th high school reunion, being held next year at a forgettable budget hotel in my quiet Northern California hometown. Do you really want to have to talk to those people? Her eyes are wide and full of judgment. I think those are stock photos. Nothing, including the aforementioned reunion, makes me feel older than being around Karen, a perky-titted, size 2, eyelash extension-wearing USC journalism student who peppers her sentences with internet slang that people and, oh fine, I simply don't understand. I am never going to a reunion, she announces the decision with the conviction of a 22-year-old who simultaneously knows everything and nothing about life. What could possibly be the point? I decide against a mini lecture about nevers and instead ask her if she's come up with any pitches for the next week. Interns don't typically write stories for the Daily, but she's a talented reporter with a gift for putting subjects at ease, and I'm determined to get her a few more bylines before her internship is up. Since Karen's working here for a small pittance and school credit at a time when newspaper reporter has been named the worst job in America for the third year in a row by financial magazines, I figure it's the least I can do. Actually, there's a piece I've been working on for a while. She rolls her office chair over to sit opposite me, her heavy chain-style bracelets clanging along the way. I'm just not sure it's something yet. I didn't sleep well last night and spent 53 minutes in traffic driving from the west side to our downtown office, so I'm not feeling much like a cheerleader at the moment, especially for somebody being vague. Do you want to at least give me the lead? She looks sheepish. Something seems off, but I don't have time to find out what, since I have to file one of my own stories within the next half hour. Can I just email it to you after I work on it some more? Of course.
Awesome.
So I'll stop there, but basically right after that scene, Karen sends her the essay, which is the admission that her teacher had made a pass at her and that nothing was ever done. So the school in the book is called Windermere. It's sort of a fictional, you know, version of all these schools I mentioned. And they basically covered it up. You know, she right. reported it. She did do the right thing.
You think that's because they want to keep their reputation
yes.
spotless?
So, yeah, when you look at why these institutions tend to do the cover-ups, especially like LAUSD and stuff, it's usually because they love the teacher or they just can't believe they feel like the teacher is usually wildly charming. There was a really famous case at Lincoln Middle School in Santa Monica, this guy Thomas Beltran. Everyone loved him. People, it would be the same thing like when you see a serial killer and people say, but he was the nicest guy,
right,
you know?
Right.
It was just like that. And so he had been abusing middle school students in the classroom who were ESL students, which is like
wow.
especially egregious and disturbing. And they had no way to like tell, and they were from
right.
immigrant communities and stuff. So even though there was video evidence of some of this, and even though he ended up admitting it, there were still parents saying he didn't do it.
Wow.
So it's kind of like what we're seeing with Roy Moore. It's that like willful ignorance. It's the whole like cognitive you know, where you know, okay, this is true. He's saying it's true. And people still will not believe it from the community. So I think it's also that we don't want to believe that this is true. We want to believe that teachers go into teaching because they are such great people. You know, they
right.
go into teaching, which pays about as great as being a journalist these days. And you know, they deal with all sorts of issues. Most teachers are wonderful. They're like surrogate parents. I had incredible teachers, you know, who I think so fondly of. But you get those few bad apples, and it's just unreal. And then when you talk about these elite schools where tuition is 40 grand a year, they have so much concern about their branding, about their
yeah.
reputation. You know,
it's
you look at a
money.
School like Exeter. How can you fundraise if you just told your people that 60 students have been abused?
Right.
It's like... So they try to keep this, and there's just no oversight. Private schools don't answer to the government or don't answer to the state. You know, they're just operating on their own. So
right.
it's very scary. And so these teachers offend time and time again. Sometimes they get moved. It's called passing the trash, where you have a credible accusation or even a teacher who admits something, and then they just say, okay, at the end of the year, you need to quietly leave. And then the guy just goes to the next county or the
yeah.
next state and gets hired there and does
or
it all over again.
Another school within the district, which is
exactly
infuriating.
Absolutely.
Crazy.
You know, this is what happened with the Catholic priests, right?
Yes,
with the whole
absolutely.
Debacle that was from Boston. So, and also, if you look at Penn State, right?
Penn State.
Well, that was a horrible situation.
I mean, everybody knew about it and did nothing
and
for
did nothing.
Years.
Yes.
And the school kept it quiet.
Right.
It's that
because
it's
of football.
Crazy that Joe Paterno
yeah.
like knew and he just
yeah.
turned the other way. It's like
exactly.
And then people are still upset that how dare you call out Joe Paterno because
right.
football in this country matters more than humanity apparently. And
besides
yeah.
they're boys, you know, they
exactly.
should be tough.
Right.
Boys will be boys, you know. That there was a girl in my high school, well actually we were in junior high, she was a group of boys like sort of attacked her on the school bus, and they took off some of her clothing and did things that today would be on the evening news. And I literally can remember it as clear as if it was yesterday. One of the moms of my friend said, "Well, boys will be boys."
Wow.
Nothing ever happened. Those boys, no one was punished. They all went on and just lived their lives.
Well, it's good that you're giving females a voice, and especially the innocent. And I say the innocent, anybody that's a minor.
Absolutely.
Because I think that is just the craziest thing. Because I feel like they really are they're innocent.
Absolutely.
They don't have a voice, you know?
Yeah, and some, you know, I wanted to go back to something you brought up about the power. You know, there are some girls who are extremely mature and, like, sexually aggressive with the teachers. And they sort of even, some of these teachers say, like, "I never would have thought of this, but she was coming on to me, or she left me this note." You know, I talked to a teacher who told me that he found a note that said, "I wish Mr. So-and-so would rape me," talking about him. And, you know, so he said that's something that never gets covered, and it's not politically correct to bring up that some of these girls or the boys, you know, are very aggressive with the female teachers. And I know that to be true because I taught at UCLA when I was 23, and I had boys, you know, trying to get with me who were like 18. But, you know, it doesn't matter. A girl who's under 18 in California cannot consent. So it doesn't matter how, you know, whatever's going on in her life. And also, if she is being aggressive with a grown man, it's probably because she has already been abused.
Right.
That's a big warning sign. You know, when I talk to these abuse experts, they start to have a warped sense of sexuality and sex and how
and love.
Yeah, and love. And a lot of these kids are desperate for affection for one reason or the other. And somebody said to me, I grew up in Irvine, which is a very safe community known for its great schools. And someone said to me, "How could anything bad have ever happened to you in Irvine?" And I just thought that was the funniest thing I'd ever heard.
You're
because
like, you don't know.
It's almost like more bad things happen in those places because there is this pressure of keeping up this perfect image. So if you have a family, the girls in this book go to a very expensive school. Some of them come from, you know, very wealthy families. You know, it's the same thing. The parents, just because they care that they're getting good education doesn't mean they're giving them the love and support they need day to day. So sometimes those girls get, you know, fall through the cracks and become targets of these predatory teachers. So it can happen to anybody. It's across every single racial, ethnic group, religious. It's not any one person, you know, who's a victim.
It's just in society. It's
just part of society, absolutely.
So you're doing a couple book signings real quick. You're doing Book Soup?
Yes, Monday, December 4th at 7 p.m. I'll be at Book Soup on the Sunset Strip.
It's a very famous bookstore.
Very famous bookstore. So I love reading there. I read there for my last book, and they have great people who come and ask really thoughtful questions. So I really look forward to that. I do. That's the only thing I get like really nervous for is Book Soup. But yeah, and then in 2018, I'm going to be in Charlotte and the Bay Area, Phoenix, Boston, some other places. So that's all on my website, and people can keep up there.
And what is your website so people can find you?
Yeah, so victorianamkung.com, which is V-I-C-T-O-R-I-A, N like Nancy, A, M like Mary, K-U-N-G.com. And all the info's there where you can buy the book. The book's on, you know, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, iTunes. It's a hardcover and an ebook and for Kindle. So pretty much
you
any device,
all bases.
Yes, you're all set.
And it's out already. It's out.
Yeah, it just came out on the 7th, and so I'm just starting to
do the whole
press tour. But it's been great, and people are really, and men too. Like I did an interview with a guy recently, and he said, you know, what can men do to help this situation? And I was really happy to hear that because I'm like, I'm tired of trying to fix it. You know, I'm trying to fix it. I'm doing my little part writing this book, but it would be great if everybody could care about this issue because it affects all of us as a society.
Right.
Even if you don't care about a 15-year-old girl getting hurt, you know, even if you're just like emotionless and you're a sociopath, you should care about things like the fact that, you know, LAUSD has paid out $300 million for sexual abuse victims of teachers just in the last 5 years.
Wow.
Like,
wow.
That's all of our money. You know what I mean? So we're paying taxes. I did not pay taxes. You know, no one likes paying taxes, but I especially don't want to pay taxes to go to some settlement to a poor girl and her lawyers. You know what I mean? So we have not just a moral responsibility, but a financial responsibility to not let this happen. And so as soon as there's a bad teacher, he's got to be out for good.
We have to change the vernacular.
Yeah.
Change the way that the dialogue takes place. And I think books like this, they're instruments for change.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, Victoria, you're always like one of the most fascinating guests that we have. definitely one of the most fascinating writers too.
Thank you.
I love that this is your second book. I love that it's even racier than your first book.
Yes.
More controversial.
Yes.
These Violent Delights, Victoria Namkung. Go see her at Book Soup once again.
Monday, December 4th at 7 p.m.
And we'll definitely, you have to let us know when you write your third book.
Thank you. I know it's coming. I do not have an idea yet, so.
You deserve a long break.
You just listen to the news. You'll get a lot of ideas.
You'll get a lot of fuel.
Maybe it will be about an impeachment if we're like,
that's right. And lastly, real quick, I just want to send a little shout out to my girlfriend who's, you know, her birthday is today. So she's letting me do this radio show, and she's let me do a lot of great things. And I just want to say happy birthday, Bonnie. All right, guys. We'll see you guys next week. Renan, thank you for filling in for Eddie.
My pleasure, as always.
Victoria, thanks for coming back and sharing your latest work.
Thank you.
It's exciting. Very exciting. All right, we'll see you guys here next week.